Hey, this is Jonathan Goodman, and I have incredibly exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, is now available for purchase in Kindle, in Audible, and in hardcover. Anywhere that you find books, please go on Amazon, please go to whatever bookstore you like, buy yourself a copy, buy a copy for a friend. Hope that you absolutely love it. Now let's get into the show. Welcome, everybody, to Ren's Firing. The Obvious Choice podcast.
Oh, man.
I didn't know how I was going to start this one. Did I do good?
You did. Yeah, you did a great job.
I did good.
Smooth segue.
First time in a while, I don't have anything really planned for this episode because there are going to be some changes, and I thought it would be good to talk about those changes and talk about the reason behind those changes. First and foremost, Ren is no longer going to be here on the podcast.
Fired again.
And so I think this is the fifth, sixth time that I fired you in.
Yeah. When was my last firing? Was it did I go a year?
A couple years ago.
Time?
You did a long
time. Oh, it was more than a year.
It was more than a year ago.
Well,
you quit. From your last one. You quit from the coaching for OTA.
Oh, yeah. But that was, that's different. That wasn't on air. The new fourth version. Okay. So it's years. All right. Because it always seems like years, no matter how long it is. So I can't tell.
Fair enough.
Something about spending time with John makes it feel like years. Years of your life.
So let me give a little bit of background. First of all, what's happening to this podcast? So this podcast is going to become much more focused. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I think it's better for the podcast. I think it's better for you. And I think it's absolutely fucking better for me. And not that this is about me, but it's getting much more focused in that the episodes are going to be one of two categories. They're going to be either shorter episodes, most likely. My guess is anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes on one topic, where I'm effectively presenting an article that I've written here on the podcast. And I'm doing that because I realize that some people prefer to listen and not read, which is totally cool. But I'm not willing to create unique content for that, because what I want to master over the course of my life is writing, not speaking. And so we're going to get into that, I think how important it is to focus and not get distracted in pursuing greatness and accepting the trade-offs that are inherent in that conversation as part of it, which runs into what we're going to talk about here. The second part of the podcast is going to be more interviews that I'm doing with others. So I have a couple interviews coming up, and these interviews are for a few reasons. One is for me personally, selfishly, to expand my own horizons and worldviews. Expose me to people who I would not otherwise be exposed to in a much deeper way.
That's what she said. Sorry, continue.
That was so good.
You're welcome, listeners.
Amber, play the song, please.
Thank you.
Hope we made you laugh, but you didn't choke on our enormously funny penis joke.
For me to ask somebody who I want to get to know if they'll be a guest on the podcast and kind of build a friendship from them. And the third is like research. If there's something that I really want to learn about for a book that I'm writing or something, for example, why not basically do my research on the podcast? Again, to be able to get exposed to the person, an easy way to invite him, but also just to give myself an opportunity to go deep with that person and then use that as my own research. So there's going to be more interviews with others. And I will correlate that by saying this isn't going to become an interview show. I'm very careful on that. There are certainly interview shows that exist out there that are largely dependent on the quality of the guest, but also of the kind of fame of the guest. Mm-hmm. The problem with those is that they kind of become a circle jerk after a bit of time. there's only so many good guests that are in vogue that are willing to go on podcasts now, that if the podcast, if the medium of the podcast is dependent upon a guest, a popular guest's willingness to show up on the podcast that week, they run out of guests pretty quickly. And you see this happening where they're getting the same people or the same podcast. People just kind of do their rounds and it's washed out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pursue my own curiosity. And so I will bring you maybe some people that you've heard of, but also I'm going to bring you some people behind the scenes that you might not have heard of that are just doing really interesting work in deep work in fields that I want to know more about. And I hope that this might introduce you to the work, but I don't want to build a platform here where my income or my success depends on my success as a podcaster. Not that that's a bad thing, but that would in turn affect and impact my goal, my singular goal, which is to pursue greatness in the art of writing. And I'm going to get much deeper into that very, very soon. So the podcast is going to be split into those two elements, shorter episodes and then interviews. So you see where I say that there's not really a place for Ren and Amber. We haven't really discussed it yet, but I mean, Amber, if she wants to hang out, she's always welcome to hang out. Ren, not so much. From time to time, maybe we'll bring you back.
Fair.
And then the other piece of it is all of the online fitness business specific content is going to be split off into its own podcast. So we haven't formed that yet. I don't know exactly what the name is, but all of the hot seats and also bringing you a lot of the brilliance from our coaches and the mentorship and a lot of the work that we're doing there that I don't really have a platform to share it on is going to go on a very specific podcast for online fitness business. And there's also going to be a YouTube channel that's specific to that. And again, doing that for a few reasons. One is to get me out of the day-to-day. You know, the work that I'm doing on the hot seats and stuff will still be there, but we just have so many brilliant coaches that work in our companies and those that I want to lift them up and give them a platform. I also, to you, the listener, if you're looking for something specific, I want you to be able to get that specific thing devoid of 30 minutes of, you know, us shooting the shit here on the podcast, right? Oh, no, I just need to know how to, like, do my DMs better on Instagram. Cool. This is going to be straightforward to that. On YouTube specifically, the added benefit is that discovery on YouTube is very strong, so long as the algorithm knows two things: who it's for and how they'll benefit. And so actually smaller, much more focused accounts that only talk about one thing for one type of person do very, very well on platforms like YouTube where there's discovery. What we've been doing and kind of including that stuff on my existing YouTube account and in the existing podcast feed where everything just kind of gets washed together, completely just crushed any kind of discovery because the algorithms have no idea who it's for. I don't even know who it's for. It's for everybody, right? But then this little bit of it is like just for these types of people. And so if they find it through some other way, good on them. We're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's a pause?
So those are the changes.
Okay.
That was a semicolon.
Long. Okay, go ahead.
That was a semicolon. Those are the changes. I think I'm going to get into much deeper here in a moment why I'm making them personally and the difficulty, which I've spoken about on the podcast the last month, you know, since the Obvious Choice book has come out and me trying to remedy the struggle that I constantly feel between the deeper work that I want to be doing and the more shallow work that needs to be done in order to amplify the deeper work and how they seem actually to almost fight against one another. They're different parts of my brain. And I haven't been able to remedy that, but I think I finally figured out a way to remedy that. So I'm excited to share that with you in the hopes that it will help you perhaps remedy that. You know, this is what I do. This is what I'm passionate about. But then there's all this other shit that I feel like I need to be doing in order to make a career out of it. And, you know, how does this get put together? That's a period when. What do you think?
Two things came to mind while you were talking. Neither one of them was me being fired, because we all knew that was going to happen. But the first thing that came to mind is there's just sort of a finite nature to the podcast experience. Like, it just, to me, there's always seemed like there's a podcast ceiling. And like you said, what do you do? Like, do you have, you know, Dr. Blankety Blank on for the 65th time to talk to you for 2.5 hours about autophagy? Like, what do you do? And where podcasting was originally sort of an information-based format and exchange, where you could have a more intimate conversation with your audience and fully flesh it out. Mm. Now it's gotten to the point where it's sort of four-dimensional social media, right? You know, how many likes can I get? Can I get a sponsor? Who's the most famous person that I can get on the podcast? What will the clips for Reels and TikTok look like? Mm. Can we wear matching sweaters during the interview? Like, it's gotten to be a bit of bullshit, to be perfectly honest with you. But the second thing is,
can I put a pin in that?
Yes.
Because I had two very interesting experiences last week.
Really?
On that exact topic. On both of those topics, actually, the sponsorship and the podcast topic. I'll start with the sponsorship one. So I was at this big business event, business mastermind thing. I've been part of this community for like 14 years now, and they had their yearly event that I went to in San Diego. And that's where I got a lot of the clarity of this and filled in a lot of the gaps. But two very interesting conversations that I had. One of them was with Ben Greenfield. So Ben Greenfield, you know, kind of started the biohacker movement. He was actually one of the first health podcasters. He started his podcast like 15 years ago. And I've known him over the years, you know, not well, but I've known him over the years. And I like the guy. I think that he's wise. I think that he's done good work. I think that he has a lot of sticking power. But what he struggled with and what he's struggling with right now and kind of finding his way out of is that he gets paid tremendous amounts of money by brands as sponsorships across his podcast, across his email list, across his social media. And it's not that he doesn't believe in these products, but he has other interests that go beyond them that he can't quite talk about because he's committed to 4 emails this week, you know, promoting whatever. And so he's been struggling with that quite a bit because they've gone so far in this direction because the money has been so good that even though he feels pulled personally and energetically in a different direction, his team's livelihood, the families of his team's livelihood that depend on him and his platforms need this money from the sponsorships. And so how do you reverse out of that? It reminded me of a story, and this is what I told him, of something that the ex-editor-in-chief of Men's Health told me many years ago in a long conversation I was having going for a walk with him. It was very cold at night, I remember, and neither of us had coats, but that's not neither here nor there. And what he said to me was, one of the reasons, and I have nothing to back this up, this is his words, right? He said, one of the reasons that Men's Health is struggling so much right now is because we knowingly have to publish about half of our magazine worth of content that we know our readership doesn't like or care for. The majority of the advertisements in Men's Health at the time, I haven't looked in the magazine for a long time, are perfumes, is men's fashion, is clothing, is that type of stuff, which means the content has to be about men's fashion and things. We know our readership doesn't like that, but the people who pay our bills force us to. And that's caused a lot of problems, which is slowly degrading the experience and hurting the overall business. And it's kind of this downward spiral because of this mechanism that we've committed to. And I don't know if that resonates with you. It might resonate with you. The second, though, was perhaps more interesting. And this goes into the podcast. I call it the podcast industrial complex. So we had a surprise at this event where Dr. Rhonda Patrick, if you're familiar with her, showed up one of the evenings. So Dr. Rhonda Patrick is wonderful. She's kind of the big research-based health podcaster. And Huberman and all those guys basically look at her and they're like, you're the OG. Like, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. Like, you're the giant. Like, she predates them. And she's gotten increasingly a massive profile, you know, like millions of followers, like massive podcasts. Like she's a big deal and she's wonderful. And so she showed up at night. Nobody knew that she was going to, at about 8:30 p.m. and did a talk and then a long Q&A about longevity. And she basically talked about the issues of microplastics for an hour. Now, she was prompted on a lot of these topics, to be fair to her, but this conversation got so nuanced to the point where somebody was like, but if I have a water filtration system, specially this kind, that filters out the microplastics, will the last 2 feet of pipes that go from under my sink to the tap are still going to be plastic? So is that an issue? And the answer is, of course, it's fucking not. But the podcast industrial complex, the medium of podcasting, self-selects for overcomplexing and making very nuanced, very minor topics, making them seem much more important and present than they are. Because you've got a lot of hours to fill. And fitness and health isn't even an 80-20 thing. I think it's like a 95-5. Like, the vast majority of stuff that really matters, that if you do that and nothing else, like, you're going to be good, can probably be covered in about 30 minutes, one time. Well, if you've got hours to fill every week and you have to continue because you have a responsibility to advertisers who pay your bills, well, you're going to have to figure out how way to fill those hours. And it becomes an exercise in academics, which is very interesting and very important. The problem is, in a public health channel that has become very big and very notable, the more you talk about something, the more important it seems to become to anybody listening. And that's where you fall into the problem of majoring in the minor, of thinking, oh, the last 2 feet of the pipes for my expensive household water filtration system to my tap is going to infect me with dangerous microplastics that are, by the way, going to be in the air no matter what you do because of where you live. And so, not to say that these things are bad, not to say you minimize these things. Of course you do. You use your own water bottles. You don't drink from plastic water bottles. You don't drink takeout coffee in plastic lined styrofoam containers. You bring your own bottle to the coffee joint. Like, those are easy things to do that you should do anyway if you're a reasonable human being who gives any kind of a fuck about the environment as well. It's also better for you. Wonderful. But what she said at the end of this, when the end of this, like, hour and a half or whatever that we were sitting there, where these questions just got so nuanced and minor and everything, at the end of it, she's like, you know, though, if there's one thing you could take from this talk, it's that every day do some sort of vigorous exercise.
Right.
Like that's like, I don't remember her exact words, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but she effectively said at the end of all of this, if there's one thing you take, and I'll downplay everything else, vigorous exercise daily, like sweat daily. Like, kind of everything else is pretty far off secondary to that. And I'm there like, hell yeah, like shaking my fist up in the air. Like, this is why I don't have a health podcast. This is why I no longer write about fitness. To be honest, this is why I no longer write about business. This is why, if you think about a lot of the people that maybe you admire, at one point basically everything that they talk about eventually evolves into self-help, self-development, you know, betterment. Because on any of these topics, like business topics, like I can tell you what you need to know. I mean, I did it in a book. I did it in The Obvious Choice. Like, there's really nothing else for me to say that matters. I could talk more, but there's not that much else that matters. And so the podcast industrial complex, I think, is very important to understand and appreciate where you're getting your information from. And not that it's not bad to listen to this stuff if it's your interest, but also to do a gut check with yourself and just be like, that was really interesting to listen to that 4-hour podcast on microplastics. Cool. Okay. Where does this matter and where does it not matter? And how can I stay focused? What was your second thing, Ren?
The second thing was the willingness to self-reflect and adjust. It's a good lesson for all the people out there that we've all worked with through the different PTDC information sources, because people get stuck in their thing and then they feel like it's unholy to change the thing at all, ever. Like, I can never change how I think about this thing. I can never change my method. I can never change my target. I can never change what's important to me. And sure. If nothing else, through the now 5.5 iterations of this podcast, I hope what people grab from it is nothing's final and nothing's fatal, right? You make different decisions based on where you are in life and what your need is. And overwhelmingly, as a creator of anything in business wise, make sure that what you're creating serves you, right? I know you want to be famous. I know you want people to know you. I know you want to have the best ratio for your split screen podcast clips that you've edited with the perfect captioned colors. But at the end of the day, is this shit helping your business at all? Like, is it serving you in any way? Or are you just trying to be amongst the number of people who are known? Because people live in a lot of, and we've had enough conversations with enough coaches to know that people live in their own business misery for way too long, way too often. And there's some shit that you just probably shouldn't be doing because you hate it. Just stop it. You can just stop and do something else. It's important.
I think that permission is valuable for sure. You absolutely have permission to not do a lot of the things that you're doing. I look at business as a constant iterative process where you should consistently be trying to get closer to your thing and becoming world class at that thing. Mm-hmm. And part of that conversation includes appreciating the trade-offs of all of the other stuff that you're not going to be doing. And then you can look at whatever in vogue perhaps asset is out there as a way to maybe amplify your thing. And so I'm looking at the world today as saying, okay, for whatever reason, my thing is writing. I don't know why that's my thing, but I've come to accept that that's my thing. There's nothing else that provides me the same combination of frustration, struggle, energy as it does, where I'm never going to get bored listening to people talk about it, where I'm going to wake up early before my family and work on it and not feel like I did a good job and still be excited to wake up early the next day and work on it. There's nothing else that provides me that in the world. And so it's very, very obvious that that's my thing, right? And for you, whatever that is, I hope that you find it. And when you do, most notably, I hope that you increasingly simplify every other aspect of your life to optimize in that direction. And your thing, whatever it is, it doesn't necessarily, and in fact, I don't think that it should be the same as your career. If it makes you a little bit of money, fine. But you should not depend on it to make the majority of your income. Woodworking, motivating others to take action, whatever your thing is, once you discover it, you point towards it. And that's going to involve a lot of very difficult conversations with yourself. And so I ask you, what are you optimizing for? And can you optimize better? When I asked myself that question, I started to think deeper into what... If you've listened this far into the podcast, I want to invite you to buy a copy of my new book, The Obvious Choice. It's available now. A lot of people have been asking me what the book's about. The central premise is that it's learning how to position yourself as the clear and trusted answer to a specific group's problems. You see, a lot of people these days are trying to become famous to the faceless, anonymous internet. Instead of becoming the obvious choice to a smaller amount of people who are going to buy from you. It's actually much better, much more profitable, much easier, and much faster, and much less stressful to be obviously perfect to a smaller amount of people than just okay to a lot of people who are never going to buy you. You see, you don't need to be the best at everything or chase the largest audience. You need to become the most relevant to your people. What I do is I emphasize the importance of understanding your audience's needs, meeting them where they already are, and delivering such value that choosing anyone else feels irrational. And so pick up a copy of the book. It's in Kindle, it's in Audible, it's in hardcover, wherever you find books. Hope that you absolutely love it. What doesn't change? What's timeless? How can I become world class at that? And then at any given time, can I leverage the timely things in order to further amplify the timeless stuff? Because there's always going to be these timely assets that are going to change how the algorithm works, the platform, whatever. So here's how this manifests with me. Can I share that?
Please share it, John. But don't share anything else.
Okay. I'll try not to.
I'm tired of you sharing.
Each week, I want to make my focus on writing a long-form article. I've probably written 4 long-form articles in the last year. And every time that I've done it, I felt like I was high on drugs the rest of the day. I don't really know what being high on drugs feels like. Like, I smoked a lot of weed in college, but like that was a long time ago. I also watched a lot of Chappelle Show in college. Those two were probably related.
Yeah, they mesh pretty well.
go together, but I digress.
Oh, man.
And so I started to think, right, my goal is to become a truly world-class writer. That's my quest. That's what I'm going to pursue, greatness. I think we all need to pursue greatness in something. Not because of the rewards that might come as a result of the greatness, but because of what we come in the act of that pursuing. And so for me, I've bought into this. I want to go slower. I want to focus more on deeper work. But it doesn't mean that I can ignore the promotional channels to get my work out into the world. So I'm going to write an article a week. And then that article is going to be read and presented here on this podcast. That video, I'm going to improve the production quality and stuff behind me, because that video then is going to be taken by our YouTube team and they're going to contextually edit that video, which is going to be shorter, right? 5 to 20 minutes as its own YouTube video. So my YouTube channel now is not going to have podcasts thrown on it, is not going to have hot seats thrown on it, right? It's only going to have effectively made for YouTube content, which is going to be me presenting the articles. And then every 3 to 4 months, My videography team is going to show up at my house and they're going to stand behind the camera and they're going to ask me a series of questions and I'm just going to talk and then they're going to take that and they're going to do stuff. We've already done that once. So YouTube will build as a result of that, right? As a result of the focus, as a result of, you know, not trying to do too much with the platform. But also, it's no extra work on my end. You see what I'm saying? It's still that one article across podcast, across YouTube. I'm going to create one image with one quote from the article to promote that article. That image then is going to get posted across Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, all with a call to action using automation where I can, like ManyChat on Instagram or whatever it is, to read the entire article. Take you back to my website. On the website itself, you'll be able to download the PDF for easier reading. It'll have an opt-in to my email list where I'll send the article. And then on social media, Instagram is going to be my only channel that I do any kind of focusing on. And so I'll pull out from my Five Reps Friday email, I'll pull out one quote from there. That's going to get put as its own thing. Again, go back to Five Reps. And then I'm basically just going to recycle old content. You know, if I feel like it, I'll do new content, but I'll basically recycle old content on Instagram to continue to focus on audience there. In the story, I'm going to create one big document of images, another big document of quotes and calls to action. And then I'm going to delegate that off so somebody can basically create a story every day or every 2 days with a quote or a line or a phrase or whatever it is, with an image or even just white on black or black on white. And then a call to action that's going to go to the email list or this podcast or YouTube or whatever it is. But that's all going to be sight unseen on my end. That's it. Right? That's it. I'm not going to measure the success on every individual platform because it's irrelevant. I think that success everywhere is a lagging indicator of becoming great somewhere. That's the title of my next article. Success everywhere is a lagging indicator of becoming great somewhere. You don't try to become good everywhere on your path to become great somewhere. You need to focus and accept that there are not going to be many people in your field in whatever you do that ever become truly world-class because they're going to be too distracted. Distraction is the problem, but the opportunity. Because if you can figure out a way to not get distracted, simplify, eliminate, so that you can focus on whatever your thing is that for whatever reason you seem to be naturally pointed towards because of all your weird little quirks and attributes and energies, and you go all in on that, very few are going to do it. Even if they have the same natural chemistry as you do. I think there's a big opportunity there. But we'll see in 10 years. That's a period.
It's a nice period.
I feel like a week is not long enough for an article. I'm talking about like a longer. I'm trying to wrap my head around that. Because it's like, well, how
it's
do,
not for me.
Does that feel like a long time for you? Because like in my head, if I write something like an article length, something more long form, like I'm not happy by the end of the week. Like I'll publish it, but like I ain't necessarily like done, you know.
My answer to you is we'll see.
Yeah,
I have curious. I have a lot of time. As you know, Amber, I have eliminated basically everything out of my life that could possibly be eliminated. And that's not a financially driven decision. I mean, I've given away a lot. I've given away a lot of upside in my businesses. I've decided not to pursue a lot. I turned down the vast majority of opportunities. And one of the things that will become increasingly important if I ever have a book that becomes a runaway success is actually going to be not taking advantages of the opportunities that present themselves. Mm-hmm. And doing what I did after Obvious Choice. Get my ass back to work. I had a very interesting conversation with somebody at this event last week, and I'll hide some details because I don't think that the details matter as much as the overall message. But it was with basically there was this guy at the event, and somebody that he knows very closely was like the only staff member of this one super famous guy. And the super famous guy, you'd know his name if I said it. He had this massive success like 8 years ago. And I finally got the opportunity to ask somebody very close to him the question that I've been wanting to ask for a long time, which is, why the hell have they not done anything else in those 8 years? And his answer was interesting. He said, complacency. Complacency. He said that so many opportunities came this person's way. They made so much money from it. And they said yes to so many of the opportunities that they've tried and stopped many times to continue the work that got to them to that level. And it's gotten to the point where it's so long ago, it's so distant, that they've all but given up on that. And that might be right for them. I don't know, right? But it sure as heck not right for me. I have had opportunities, not to the extent that this person has, but I've had opportunities, of course. And I've come to realize that actually I'm happiest when I can put my head down and do the work. And the worst thing that could happen is something becomes a runaway success and I lose sight of that. And then the work becomes so foreign to me that I stop pursuing true greatness in it. It's so long ago that I can no longer get it back. So I don't know is the answer to your question, Amber.
I just think with the amount that you edit, that's intense.
I edit a lot. I write fast. And that's the biggest tip that I have for writing. Now everybody writes differently, so it's hard to give tips for writing. But my biggest tip for writing is basically vomit on the page and then edit it down afterwards. The hardest thing to do is deal with a blank page or a blank editor or whatever. And so I just vomit anything down on the page and then I edit it back. And in the course of editing, I'll often add and subtract and stuff. You're right. It takes a long time. I've got an article that's just about ready to go. It's about 2,500 words. It took me a day and a half. Right. But it was basically all day Monday and I've worked for it. It's about 12:30. I've worked for it for about 4 hours today. So I guess my answer to you is I don't know whether I'll be able to keep up with the cadence of once a week. I will try. But I won't stress out if something takes me 2 weeks or if I'm working on something and I can't quite make sense of it, right? I won't publish it that week. I'll kind of let it sit. I'll get ahead where I can. But also, I'm okay with it taking a long time. How many people out there in the world right now are trying to publish a long-form free article on the internet that took them 10 plus hours to produce? if you want to stand out, you've got to do shit others are unwilling to do. Either because it's not important enough to them, they're too distracted, or they're simply unable because of other responsibilities that they've either accepted as something that they wanted to do or via their acquiescence to it. How do you stand out? You focus way more, you work way harder, and you produce way better shit than anybody else out there. I think it's that simple and it's that hard. People are very clearly not going to find me on the internet because of my ability to entertain through an Instagram reel. I've tried and failed at videos, at short form videos, long enough to realize that that simply ain't me, man. And even if it's the best opportunity, it's cool. It ain't me. It's for other people. There are other folks that are able to be much more eloquent, that build frameworks out of thin air, that are able to just come up with these one-liners like that on a whim. And that's their superpower. Yeah. And that's their superpower, which I think is wonderful, which I think they should go all in at. Some of them do. And they're able to build, they will be able to build bigger audiences quicker than I will. My goal is not to sprint and build an audience as quick as possible. My goal is to be able to build work that compounds upon itself as a flywheel for decades. And the only way that I know to do that is to be willing to put in the deep work and is to focus all of my energies on the timeless stuff that doesn't change. And then at any given time, I can try to amplify it with the timely thing. But it all needs to point back to the timeless stuff. It's not going to go anywhere. Because the last thing that I want to do is get really, really good at TikTok and then have two countries decide that they want to fight with each other. And then my entire audience on TikTok goes away because of some weird geopolitical thing. And then it comes back 5 hours later, and then a bunch of billionaires decide that they might buy it, but nobody knows whether that's conjecture or not. And all the while, all of my hopes and dreams and my work that I've been working on for the last 5 years and put thousands of hours into is up in thin air, and I'm going to bed at night saying to my wife, you know, maybe I should have done something outside of TikTok.
That's how Ren and I hang our head in shame.
There will be people who will build faster than me at any given time, at every given time. I can promise you that I am never going to be the person who is going to be the most in your face, the most in vogue. I am never going to be moving quicker or faster or getting more attention than anybody else out there. There will always be somebody who will be getting more attention to me. But what I can promise you, and you can bet your ass on this and stick a pin in it and quote me on it, is that I will be the one who will be around in the next 10 years.
There's something about sticking a pin in your ass. My head is still trying to like.
You can bet your ass on this and stick a
pin. I know, stick a pin. I know, but just my brain couldn't wrap my head around it.
Pin in ass scenario. Thank you very much.
I used to get acupuncture done a fair bit.
That is my last name.
And they'd always, acupuncturists just always want to stick pins in your ass.
Sticking pins and.
They just always want to do that. That's just like. No matter what, everything comes from your piriformis for some reason. It's like, it's my left elbow. Like, what the hell? Like, oh, it must be your ass. It's you're like, your you just come on.
Get the piriformis needle. My acupuncturist only went shirtless. It was always, and maybe that's why I didn't feel the magic.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have exposed ass in lieu of just
what?
Lower back. I'll never know. I'll tell you that.
We'll never. All shout of this to say, Kim, summing up, there's 2 points. Number one, Ren, I love you. I'm sorry to fire you again.
It's all right, John. The love was reciprocated and it had to happen.
Number two, I feel like this is a going pro moment for me. Going pro to me is a matter of absurd focus and obsession and clarity, where you know what you do, you know what you don't do, and you're okay with others winning in other ways, and happy for them, genuinely, because you're so sure in your own path. And I feel like this is a going pro moment for me, and I'm pretty excited about it, and hope that you stick around for the ride. Wynn, anything you want to say as we...
At some point in my life, I'd like to listen from true episode one all the way to this episode, just to see the incredible evolution of this production over time. I mean, you know, I feel like a young Gary Coleman on Different Strokes. I've grown up on the show. And any audience has watched that. Some. I grew up some on the show. But this is such a good lesson. It's such a good lesson. It's a good lesson for me.
How so?
And I don't like to learn lessons normally. I object to learning. But because coming into this business along with the internet age, the way that I did, there's just a tendency to want to be all things to all people in all spaces.
Yeah.
And it's in the way that what we associated with discipline in business from maybe 2010 until now has always been accumulation. It's not often been omission. And I think discipline via omission is an underutilized form of discipline. More people could benefit from disciplining themselves by removing things instead of discipline by increase. I've got to do more. I've got to be more disciplined. Yeah. I've got to be in more places. I got to do more things. I got to learn more skills. Right. I think that's becoming...
I need this productivity app. Yeah. I need this note-taking technique. All that does is that makes the conveyor belt spin faster.
Right. Exactly. Man, that's a good analogy.
It's for my next book.
Yeah. Right. And I feel like my conveyor belt is spinning faster.
Yeah.
I'm not getting more accurate at the checkout, but there's just more stuff coming to it. It's a good lesson.
There's a thing with that though. So temporarily it will work because you start to focus more. And so it feels like it's working, but then you hit a wall. And end up
what,
on your
what feels like it's working? Sorry, Amber. What?
By so this is how, like, before I started taking medication for ADHD, this is how I self-medicated. Is I kept myself so busy to stay focused. And so, like, if you're that kind of person, whether ADHD or not, but like, if you're saying yes to things, like if you feel like you thrive in chaos, like you are probably self-medicating to a degree, using that extra cortisol and stress and adrenaline to fuel you, but then you hit that wall where it stops working. So like, if you think about the conveyor belt thing that you were saying, like temporarily you're laser focused, you feel like you've got it, you've got a rhythm and it feels good and, you know, da 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 da, but then eventually it just all ends up all over the floor. So just calling out that brief period of where it feels like it's working, but it's probably not for long.
I guess it's just a series of band-aids that mask the greater problem.
Well, it's hijacking your body's hormone system to function even in a temporary space.
John, this good show, John. It's a peek inside the life and times, and it's been helpful for me. There's clarity in firing.
I guess the overall message and something that I really had been thinking about a lot and I'm trying to think about is, what are we doing here? What are we pursuing? Why? What are we optimizing for? Is there a way that you can remove as many obstacles as possible to be able to 10 times your ability to get better or your output at that one thing you're optimizing for? Not just try to get a little bit better, but can you... And in doing that, what type of person would you become if you're more focused, if you're more present? If you're truly working in your, call it your unique ability, your 5%, a whole bunch of business leaders give different words, terms for it. If you're truly working on that, right, on any given day, there will be trade-offs. There absolutely will be trade-offs. But how good would that feel? How good would that feel? I'm excited to find out. Can we play the Ask a Black Guy song once more before Ren leaves us?
I was just thinking that a few minutes ago. I'm like, we need to play it one more time, but you need to ask Ren a question.
Ren, can you tell me the first name of the girl you're dating?
Oh.
Yes.
Hang on. Let me play the music.
It's another exciting segment of Ask a Black Guy.
Her first name is Miss. Are we done? Good show.
God fucking damn it.
Stay classy, San Diego.